mourning processions are being held across Iran to mark the eve of the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, Prophet Muhammad's grandson. In a fresh provocative act, Israeli officials and settlers storm Al-Aqsa Mosque and occupied Al-Quds and prevent Palestinian worshippers from entering the holy site. Also coming up, Ukraine's intelligence agency admits Kiev was responsible for last year's attack on the bridge connecting the Crimean Peninsula to mainland Russia. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Mourning ceremonies are underway across Iran to commemorate Tasua, the day before the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam, and a grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. Every year, black-clad mourners mark the occasion in massive processions at mosques and religious centers. The commemoration services culminate in Ashura, which falls on July 28th this year. On Ashura, Imam Hussein and 72 of his faithful companions were all martyred in an unequal battle against the tyrant of the time. The third Shia Imam had risen against the tyrannical rule and refused to capitulate. Imam Hussein gave his life to protect Islam and Islamic values. Political commentator Faraz Ali says Imam Hussein's standing against oppression and injustice inspired many leaders and nations throughout history.
And those who oppose the message of Karbala, they understand this as well. Like, for example, I can give you a fresh example from Sweden. We have millions of people on pilgrimage to Karbala on the day of Arbaeen. But the Swedish media doesn't cover the issue. It's one of the biggest religious gatherings, and in the best days, they only write some notes about it, and nothing else. I think that's because, and that's not only limited to Sweden, it's most Western countries, that Denmark, UK, and so on, that they don't write about it because they don't want the tragedy and the revolution in Karbala to inspire people, because it has inspired. If we go back in the time before the modern era, we have different non-Muslims like Gandhi, Jefferson, and other Westerners and non-Muslims who have been inspired by Imam Hussein and who has been quoted saying things that they admire about Imam Hussein. So I think that the establishment today, the global arrogance, understand that, and that's why they don't want the revolution in Karbala to be a role model for people to resist against oppression.
After more than three decades, thousands of Shia Muslims in Kashmir have taken part in Muharram processions in the Indian-controlled capital, Srinagar. During the procession, participants also condemned the desecration of Quran in Sweden, slamming the Swedish government for allowing the sacrilege. The Indian administration removed this 34-year ban after a series of negotiations between government officials and Shia representatives, which resulted in a one-time permission. But it was allowed upon several conditions and under heavy security. In the years the ban was in place, mourners who defied restrictions either faced detention or had their procession foiled by the police. Iran's Air Force has wrapped up two-day nationwide drills aimed at bolstering military preparations. Top brass military officials have hailed the drills as successful, saying that no one would dare violate Iran's territorial integrity.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's Air Force has wrapped up the 11th edition of aerial drills codenamed Defenders of Velayat Sanctuary. During the two-day nationwide maneuvers, Air Force units conducted a full range of operations and exercised various tactics using drones, fighter jets, transport, logistical, and refueling aircraft, as well as air ambulances. The operations were conducted over various areas from the Persian Gulf to the northwestern and northeastern regions. The main stage of the drills kicked off in the central province of Isfahan on Sunday night, as fighter jets and bombers carried out nocturnal operations and detonated the mock enemy's ground targets with Qasid-upgraded standoff missiles. The Iranian military drones also conducted major operations. Various combat, reconnaissance, and electronic warfare UAVs, such as Kaman-12, Karar, Muhajir-6, and Arash destroyed targets using different modified bombs with pinpoint accuracy. On the sideline of the drills in Isfahan, the chief of staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bogheri, hailed the Air Force for achieving the main objectives of the maneuvers, saying the country's military preparedness prevents enemies from taking any hostile action.
The Army's Air Force has provided a very suitable and acceptable level of security for Iran's airspace from the north to the Strait of Hormuz and the three islands of the Greater Tomb, Lesser Tomb, and Abu Musa. With this level of readiness, no enemy has the capability to penetrate and violate the airspace of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Major General Bogheri also said the power, readiness, and vigilance of the Air Force will constantly improve, promising a brighter future ahead. Iranian military experts and technicians have in recent years made substantial headway in manufacturing a broad range of indigenous equipment, making the armed forces self-sufficient. Homegrown Iranian military products have also found many clients in the world. Iranian officials have repeatedly warned that the country will not hesitate to strengthen its military capabilities, which are entirely meant for defense.
This massive exercise is aimed at bolstering preparedness of the Iranian Air Force. It also serves as a clear warning message to the enemies of the Islamic Republic against any act of aggression. Mahdi Abbasian, Anorak.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it is resolved to protect the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after dozens of Israeli officials and settlers, backed by troops, made a provocative intrusion into the holy site.
It is a provocative act that offends the sentiments of our Palestinian people, the Arab and Islamic nation, and all freedom-loving people. Our Palestinian people, together with the forces of resistance, including Hamas, will defend the Arab, Palestinian, and Islamic identity of Al-Aqsa Mosque, no matter the sacrifices. We have always emphasized that Al-Aqsa Mosque is a red line, and we have proven through our actions and operations that if this red line is crossed, the people and the resistance will not remain silent.
Qassem said the recurring incident is escalating the conflict to a dangerous level and it is in violation of all humanitarian norms. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman condemned the incident. Nasser Kanani said the presence of far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir in the compound goes in line with the regime's scheme of violating Islamic sanctities and hurting Muslim sentiments around the world. Also, the Islamic Jihad resistance movement called on young Palestinian fighters to confront Israeli forces on all fronts. On Thursday, Israeli settlers entered the mosque compound, walked around, and performed rituals. Ben-Gvir accompanied the settlers. Israel and Jordan signed an agreement after the regime's seizure of East outlets in 1967. Under the deal, non-Muslim worship at the compound is prohibited. Israel's deadly violence across the occupied Palestinian territories shows no signs of abating. Now a Palestinian teen has fallen victim to the regime's incessant bloodshed in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, 14-year-old Faris Shar Habil Abu Samra was wounded by Israeli live fire in the head during a raid in the city of Qalqilya. He later succumbed to his injuries at the hospital. The new fatality came after Israeli forces attacked the western district of the city, using live and rubber-coated bullets, stun grenades, and tear gas against civilians. Earlier on Wednesday, Israeli troops fatally shot a Palestinian man in a refugee camp near Nablus. It came a day after three Palestinians were killed by the regime forces near the same city. Israeli forces regularly launch deadly raids across the West Bank, particularly in the cities of Nablus and Jenin. The regime has killed over 200 Palestinians so far this year, including 37 children and 11 women. Our correspondent Mona Kandil joined us earlier from Ramallah with details about a deadly Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Qalqilya.
The Israeli military issued a statement saying that they raided the neighborhood and Qalqilya city in order to conduct arrests among Palestinians. This is one of the justifications the Israeli military gives every day they raid Palestinian areas. Classified as Area C, supposed to be under full control of the Palestinian Authority, even if it's occupied by the Israelis. However, these areas are supposed to be under the authority of the Palestinian or the control of the Palestinian Authority. The Israeli military claimed that Palestinians hurled stones and Molotov cocktails at the Israeli forces, the fully armed troops, and that's why they used live fire. They used their guns. But it's not true. Every time they raid Palestinian areas, the soldiers use excessive force against Palestinians, assassinating Palestinians. Killing a Palestinian this way would be considered by experts and analysts, observers, as extrajudicial killing. And it seems that the Israeli troops would continue even to use their guns to simply shoot and kill Palestinians, even if they do nothing, even if they do not pose any threat against the Israelis, knowing at the end of the day that they would not be dragged to trials, they would not be prosecuted for killing innocent people.
Ukraine's intelligence agency has for the first time acknowledged a sabotage operation that badly damaged a bridge connecting Russia to Crimea in October of last year. Speaking on national television, the head of the security service of Ukraine said that his agency was behind the attack. Vasyl Malyuk was referring to the explosion that was caused by a truck bomb that left three people dead. Ukraine had not officially claimed responsibility, but Russia then blamed it on Kiev, calling it a terrorist act. Earlier this month, the bridge came under another attack by two maritime drones, which Russia said was launched by Ukrainian forces. Kiev has yet to confirm the recent attack, but Ukrainian officials had earlier portrayed the bridge as a legitimate target. The bridge is a vital supply route for Russian forces in the war with Ukraine. The North Korean leader has held talks with Russian and Chinese delegations in Pyongyang. Kim Jong-un pledged to boost military and defense cooperation with Moscow and Beijing. During the meeting, Russia's defense minister Sergei Shoigu handed Kim a letter from President Vladimir Putin. Kim, for his part, thanked Putin for sending a military delegation to attend North Korea's Victory Day anniversary. He added the meeting deepens strategic and traditional ties between the two countries. Chinese delegation led by a Communist Party Politburo member also held talks with North Korean officials. Handed a letter for Kim from President Xi Jinping. Chinese and Russian delegations arrived in Pyongyang to take part in celebrations marking the 70th anniversary of an armistice that ended the Korean War in the 1950s. The North celebrates it as Victory Day. The U.S. Federal Reserve raised interest rates yet again, but its attempt to slow record inflation may push the country into a double-dip recession. Their headline rate is now 5.3%, which is the highest level since the year 2001. Ramin Mazahiri has more from Chicago.
The United States Federal Reserve raised the interest rate once again, reaching its highest level in 22 years, with no indication for when it will return to normal.
We'd be comfortable cutting rates when we're comfortable cutting rates, and that won't be this year, I don't think. Inflation remains well above our longer-run goal of 2%. Growth in consumer spending appears to have slowed from earlier in the year. Although activity in the housing sector has picked up somewhat, it remains well below levels of a year ago, largely reflecting higher mortgage rates.
Low consumer spending spells major trouble for an economy in which consumer spending provides 70% of GDP. The housing sector just saw its first price decline in 6 years, and housing is the primary financial asset for the average family.
A well-known byproduct of prolonged high interest rates is that it will cause precarious businesses to go bankrupt and provoke mass unemployment. Data shows this is already taking place.
Corporate bankruptcies just hit their highest first-half levels since 2010. Planned layoffs are at the highest first-half levels since 2009. The damage done by prolonged high interest rates is revealed by the highest level in years for credit card, car loan, and other debt, and all while still failing to reduce record prices for the most basic goods.
People are suffering from it, and a lot of more people are going to food banks to get food because they can't afford to buy a lot of the food, and also the government has cut food subsidies for people who in need.
Despite the economic hardship, Washington has ended key coronavirus-era programs with health insurance just revoked for millions of people. States are reporting their first increases in years for their poverty rates, all of which contributes to President Joe Biden's near-record-low approval rating.
Yeah, it might cause Biden to lose the election because he's not doing enough about inflation. I'm sure he knows that. I mean, people are going to, whatever, if it's going to be Trump versus Biden or whoever, people are going to vote for where the economic situation, where they think it's going to be better. Because most people see the two parties as being the same.
There are other ways to curb excessive prices that don't burden the working class, such as price controls, limiting corporate profits, preventing price gouging, and increasing wages. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Niger's Army Command has declared its support for a coup by soldiers of the Presidential Guard, saying its priority is to avoid destabilizing the country. The Army said it had decided to adhere to a declaration by soldiers who announced in a late-night televised address that they had stripped President Mohamed Bazoum of power. The Army said its objective was to avoid a deadly confrontation that could create a bloodbath and affect national security. Takeover started on Wednesday when some guards at the presidential palace cut it off, blocking the president inside. Soldiers said Bazoum had been stripped of power and the Republic's institutions suspended. Now the Army says that all of its activities by political parties in Niger are on hold. The African Union has condemned the coup, urging the release of Bazoum.
I joined the African Union in a communique condemning what has happened in Niger and recommending the restoration of constitutional order and the release of President Bazoum and his family.
The UN has condemned the coup in Niger. The U.S., the European Union, and several other countries and organizations have also called for the release of Bazoum. China and Russia have called on all relevant parties to resolve differences through dialogue. This marks the seventh coup in West and Central Africa since 2020. Niger has a long history of coups since its independence from France in 1960. Bazoum is supported by Western countries, and the coup against him is viewed as a manifestation of anti-French sentiment in the region. Juntas in neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso have grown closer to Russia since they took charge in recent years and cut ties with traditional Western allies. And that is for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. Bye-bye for now.
Mournful is the earth as heaven starts to cry. Water doubts its worth as lips begin to dry. Listen to the silence. It breaks with a sad goodbye. Amid the drums of war is a mother's lullaby.
Hussein, 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 I cry for you in pain. I cry for you in pain. I cry for you.
in the limelight.
France is sliding into recession. That's according to experts and analysts who predicted the worst economic forecast for France. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, the French economy is ending the second quarter with an unexpected heavy decline in services and manufacturing, signaling a likely contraction that a compiled by S&P Global showed recently. Based on Purchasing Manager Index, PMI, flash data from the Hamburg Commercial Bank, HCOB, the report suggested a 0.5% contraction from the previous quarter, as output levels in France fell for the first time since the start of 2023. A worsening decline in manufacturing production was accompanied by a renewed reduction in activity across the services sector, data revealed. The overall level of output in France declined at the strongest pace since February 2021. The flash composite PMI output index for France fell for the first time since January, dropping from 51.2 in May to 47.3 in June, below the critical 50 threshold that separates growth from contraction and hitting a 28-month low. Norman Liebeck, an economist at HCOB, said prior to June reading, our nowcast model had signaled economic growth of 0% for the second quarter, with manufacturing contracting and services expanding. However, figures for June fell short of expectations, as now not only the manufacturing sector but also the services economy is expected to contract, and economic growth turns negative overall along with it, he added. Liebeck stated that although the latest figures do not yet represent a recession, a speculation that one will occur is likely to increase. Deterioration in demand, in particular from abroad, was driving June's slump in business activity further and faster, Red Report said. The survey data signaled a continued downturn in factory production, extending the manufacturing output slump that started in the middle of 2022. Economists said driving the French economy into contraction territory was the services sector, where activity levels declined for the first time since January. According to survey respondents, inflation, challenging financial conditions such as difficulties securing loans and business shutdowns were the main factors behind the slump in French business activity. Meanwhile, Guardian reported the Eurozone slipped into recession in the first 3 months of the year, after official figures were revised to show the bloc's economy shrank as the rising cost of living weighed on consumer spending. Figures from Eurostat, the EU's statistical agency, showed gross domestic product GDP fell by 0.1% in the first quarter of 2023 and the final 3 months of 2022 after revisions to earlier estimates. A technical recession is generally defined as two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Previous estimates suggested the single currency bloc had narrowly avoided recession with zero growth in both quarters. The updated figures showed the wider EU swerved a recession after GDP rose by 0.1% in the first 3 months of the year, after a contraction of 0.2% in the final quarter of 2022. Households across the Eurozone have come under pressure from rising living costs after Russia-Ukraine crisis triggered a sharp increase in gas prices, fueling the highest rates of inflation since the foundation of the single currency bloc. With consumers under pressure from the higher energy and food prices, household final consumption dragged down GDP across the euro area by 1/10 percentage points after a larger 1 percentage point drop in the previous quarter. Several eurozone economies were in recession or came close to recording 2 consecutive quarters of decline, including Germany, the EU's largest economy. France recorded close to zero growth, with flatlining growth in the fourth quarter and a modest increase of 0.2% in the first quarter of 2023. Business activity growth in the euro area slowed in June amid lingering fears of the impact of higher interest rates and concerns over demand growth, data compiled by S&P Global showed. According to the calculations, the eurozone's Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, plunged to 50.3 in June from 52.8 in the previous month. A PMI reading over 50 indicates growth or expansion of business activity, while a reading below this threshold suggests contraction. The indicator is now at its lowest in 5 months. Eurozone business output growth came close to stalling in June, pointing to renewed weakness in the economy after brief growth revival recorded in the spring, S&P Global said in a press release. Although energy and supply chain worries have eased since late last year, June has seen a further escalation of concerns over demand growth and in particular the impact of higher interest rates and the resulting possibilities of recessions both in domestic markets and further afield. The decline was led by France, which has been suffering from worker strikes, and Germany, which recently saw its factory orders slump. Analysts noted that manufacturing was the principal area of weakness for the overall business activity in June, along with service sector expansion, which has slowed sharply.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Respected elders and brothers, sisters, lovers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim assalam, I want to express our condolences to our living Imam and all of you on this occasion. So when it comes to Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam, what are those characteristics that he has? And when those enemies take up their arrows and they take up their swords, what are the characteristics that they're fighting against? And when I think about it from that perspective, it might be easier to bring tears to my eyes when I see that they're not just cutting down a person. They're not just cutting away at somebody's arms. What they're cutting away at is the essence of humanity and dignity. So what do we know about Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam? What do we say in that famous ziyarah from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam? فَنِعْمَ الصَّابِرُ الْمُجَاهِدُ الْمُحَامِ النَّاصِرُ. What are we saying there? That how excellent Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam was. He was the best of helpers. He was the best of warriors. He was the best of protectors. He was the best of brothers. He was the best of those who came and responded to their Lord. He was one who would strive for those things that others would back away from. So when I hear about Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam, I'm thinking that this is the person who had all those qualities. And these enemies are going and they're attacking somebody like that. All of loyalty, all of bravery, all of brotherhood, all of that's being attacked. As you know, brothers and sisters, Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam had a very special role. He was the siqa. He was the one who would bring the water. You know, sometimes we don't appreciate this because water is so readily available. But imagine that we were put in the hot desert sand with the sun blazing down upon us. What would we be caring about? Our mouths would be thirsty and we'd be waiting for that time when water would be brought to us. This is how people saw Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam. He's the water bringer. He was the one who was sahib al-liwa. He was the flag bearer. In an army, the flag bearer was so important. That's where people would rally around. That's where people would go to. When they're concerned about what's happening, they would look to the flag and they'd see, if that's standing high, then we're okay. The army is still intact. Let's now go through the story of Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Sallallahu alayka ya Ibn Rasulullah. Wa ala al-arwah allati halat bifina'ik. يا ليتنا كنا معكم فنفوز معكم فوزا عظيما. Peace and blessings be upon you, O our master Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. Peace be upon you and your blessed body that was lying on the sands of Karbala while your mouth was thirsty. Peace and blessings be upon you and upon your companions who were with you until the end. If only we could be with you and have attained the great victory that you attained. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas ibn Amir al-Mu'mineen. How important Abbas alayhi salam was to Imam Hussein. If we read the maqtal of what happened on the day of Ashura, we know that Abbas alayhi salam must have been eager to go and fight the enemy from early on. But he knew one thing, that Imam Hussein alayhi salam needed him. He was very important to the Imam. He was like the Imam's right hand. So Abbas alayhi salam waits. He waits until the end. He goes to the Imam Hussein alayhi salam. There are different reports as to what happens now. One of the reports say that Imam Hussein alayhi salam looks at Abbas. He says to him, the children are thirsty. Abbas is the siqa. Oh Abbas, let's go and get some water for the children. This report says that Imam Hussein and Hadrat Abbas together advanced on the enemy. They fight the enemy bravely. Eventually they get separated. But let's go now to Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam. Imam Hussein had told him that the children are thirsty. He has a responsibility. He wants to go and fulfill that responsibility. So what does he do at that point? He cries out his battle cry. Inni ana al-Abbas aghdu bis-siqa wala akhafu ash-sharra yawm al-multaqa. I am Abbas. I am the one who brings water. I am not scared of any battle. They say that there were 4,000 men who were gathered on the banks of the river. I don't know how he did it, but the son of Imam Ali alayhi salam somehow makes his way to the river banks. He fills the water skin. How is he going to bring it back? He decides that he's going to need a shield for the skin. What is going to be the shield for the water? It's going to be his very own body. Abbas alayhi salam is coming towards the children with the water. The enemy is surrounding him. They are from all angles attacking him. One of them raises his sword. The sword comes down. Abbas alayhi salam cries out, إِن قَطَعَتُمْ يَمِينِي فَإِنِّي أُحَامِي عَبَدًا عَنْ دِينِي وَعَنْ إِمَامٍ صَادِقِ الْيَقِينِ. If you want to cut off my right hand, I will never give up defending this religion. I will never give up defending this imam, this pure imam, this truthful imam. Abbas alayhi salam shifts his sword to his left hand. But soon afterwards, the cry comes from Abbas. قَدْ قَطَعُوا بِبَغْيِهِمْ يَسَارِي فَأَصْلِهِمْ يَا رَبِّي حَرَّ النَّارِ. Oh Allah, they have cut off my left hand, so send them to the fire of hell. At this point, Abbas alayhi salam takes the water skin to his chest. There is no sword because there is no hands to hold the sword. Abbas alayhi salam makes his way towards the camp, but the enemy is surrounding him. They say that sometime later in Medina, when they brought news to his mother, Ummul Baneen, of what happened in Karbala, her first question was, tell me about Hussein. They told her that Hussein has been martyred. She says that, I wish that everything in this world and my sons would have been martyred, but Hussein would be living. And then she tells them, but tell me about my sons. Tell me about Abbas. She says that, tell me, is it true what they say? Or is it not true that they cut off my son's hands and they took a rod and they beat him with the rod? Because I know that if he had his hands, they would not have been able to do what they did to him. The cry is now coming from Abbas alayhi salam. Ya Aba Abdullah, alayka min as-salam. Peace be upon you, my brother Hussein. Imam Hussein comes to him. He must have been thinking, Abbas, when I left you, you had your arms, you had your sword, but what has happened to you now? Al-an inkasara dhahri wa qallat hilati. My very backbone has been broken. All means of escape have been blocked for me.
Oh, Hussein, you'll live forever
in our hearts and in our minds.
I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Oh, Hussein, you'll live forever
in our hearts and in our minds.
I swear to Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., a Republican lawmaker, Tony Gonzalez of Texas, has condemned the crisis at the southern border and inhumane treatment of migrants attempting to cross into the United States, but did not pin the blame on Texas Governor Greg Abbott. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered the story and tells us more. Representative Tony Gonzalez, whose Texas district includes 800 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border, said the tactics used to deter illegal migration are not acceptable, but stopped short of criticizing Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Governor Greg Abbott has implemented floating barriers in the middle of the Rio Grande River, as well as razor wire to deter migrants from entering the United States. In an internal complaint, a Texas state trooper raised concerns about the tactic, saying it put migrants, including young children, at risk of drowning and serious injury. The trooper also claimed Texas officials had been directed to withhold water and push them back into the river. In one instance, the trooper said he and his team rescued a woman who was struck in the razor wire and having a miscarriage. The border crisis has been anything but humane. I think you're seeing the governor do everything he possibly can just to secure the border, Tony Gonzalez, a Republican, told Face the Nation on Sunday, 23rd of July. Gonzalez added, I don't think the boys are the problem, noting that migrants were drowning long before the floating barriers were put in place. The reality is the boy is only a very small little portion of the river. When pressed on whether it was acceptable that migrants were being harmed by such measures, Tony Gonzalez said, This is not acceptable, it's not acceptable, and it hasn't been acceptable for 2 years. The Biden administration has threatened to sue Texas if the barriers are not removed, saying it violates federal law and creates serious risk to public safety and the environment. However, Texas Governor Greg Abbott appears unlikely to back down. We will see you in court, Mr. President, the governor tweeted on Friday. On Sunday, 23rd of July, the White House responded with a statement saying that if Governor Greg Abbott truly wanted to drive towards real solutions, he'd be asking his Republican colleagues in Congress, including Texas Senator Ted Cruz, why they voted against President Biden's request for record funding for the Department of Homeland Security, and why they're blocking comprehensive immigration reform and border security measures to finally fix our broken immigration system. Gonzalez had also called on Congress to step up and offer solutions. I don't want to see one person step one foot in the water and more or less have us talk about the discussion of some of these inhumane situations that they're put in, he said. We can't just wait on the president to solve things. We can't wait for governors to try and fix it themselves, Gonzalez said. Congress has a role to play. Gonzalez recently introduced the HIRE Act to make it easier for migrants to obtain temporary work visas to address the workplace shortage. He said the Biden administration is doing very little, if nothing, to focus on legal immigration. And he said he would much rather see a plan to deal with legal pathways than a focus on illegal entry into the United States. What do we do with the millions of people that are already here? What do we do with the millions of people that are coming here illegally? How do we prevent them from taking these dangerous trucks? One of those options is through work visas, he said. But Tony Gonzalez, Republican of Texas, wouldn't say if he had confirmation from House Speaker Kevin McCarthy if the bill would ever be up for a vote on the House floor. USA Today has also covered the same story and tells us more. Representative Tony Gonzalez, Republican of Texas, condemned the crisis at the southern border and inhumane treatment of migrants attempting to cross into the United States, but did not pin the blame on Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Gonzalez, whose district lies along Texas's border with Mexico, said on CBS's Face the Nation program, "There is a disconnect between what is happening at the top and the person at the ground that is doing the actual function." The Justice Department informed Texas Governor Greg Abbott that Texas officials have until Monday to remove a floating barrier wall of buoys he recently approved in the Rio Grande Valley, or else face a lawsuit. At the shoreline of the river are razor wire barriers also put up at the instruction of Governor Greg Abbott. Critics have said the barriers are inhumane and pose a real danger to public safety. Texas Governor Greg Abbott scoffed at the letter, writing on Twitter, "We will see you in court, Mr. President." Gonzalez said the border crisis has been anything but humane, but added that he thinks Governor Abbott is doing what he can to secure the border. "I think you're seeing how desperate a situation is happening in Texas," Gonzalez said, calling for his fellow lawmakers to act on the issue. "We cannot just wait on the president to solve things. We can't wait for governors to try to fix it themselves. Congress has a role to play in this." State troopers were reportedly ordered to push migrants attempting to cross the Rio Grande River back into the water and deny them drinking water in extreme heat. Representative Tony Gonzalez on Sunday slammed the treatment and said it was not acceptable. "Everything that is happening along the border is just adding fuel to the fire, because you're having people at the very top say one thing and the people down at the ground do another," he said. Gonzalez added, "The governor no doubt is doing everything he can to secure the border." Gonzalez laid the blame on lower-ranking officials. In a letter to President Joe Biden last week, more than 80 Democratic lawmakers, led by Representative Joaquin Castro, Democrat of Texas, attacked the border policies as barbaric and putting asylum seekers at serious risk of injury or death. The letter also took aim at the floating barrier wall in the Rio Grande River, which could pose an increased risk of drowning for migrants who attempt to cross the Rio Grande. Representative Gonzalez said he did not think the buoys are the problem, since we've seen people drown last year. There were hundreds of migrants that are drowning, adding that the buoys occupy a small portion of the Rio Grande River. The website bnn.network/politics has also covered the same story and tells us more. Representative Tony Gonzalez, a Republican whose district includes 800 miles of U.S.-Mexico border, has publicly aired his criticisms of the methods Texas has been using to deter illegal migration, calling them not acceptable. These tactics, implemented by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, include floating barriers and razor wire in the Rio Grande River. A Texas state trooper has echoed Gonzalez's concerns, stating that these methods pose significant dangers to migrants, including to children, putting them at risk of drowning and even serious injury. Despite his criticism of the tactics, Representative Gonzalez, Republican of Texas, did not direct his disapproval at Texas Governor Greg Abbott directly. He stated that the governor was doing everything possible to secure the border. He also argued that the floating barriers were not the root of the problem, as migrants have been drowning even before they were put in place. Gonzalez emphasized that the issue of migrants being harmed by such measures was unacceptable and has been for the past 2 years. He called on Congress to offer solutions and criticized the Biden administration for its lack of focus on legal immigration. In response to the workforce shortage, he recently introduced the HIRE Act to make it easier for migrants to obtain temporary work visas in the United States. The Biden administration has threatened to sue Texas if the barriers are not removed, asserting that they violate federal laws and pose a serious risk to public safety and the environment. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, however, appeared unyielding, responding with a terse, "We will see you in court, Mr. President."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The viewpoints of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the tragedy of Karbala. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam brought his dear ones to the desert of Karbala in order to clarify the truth. He knew what was going to happen. Yet he brought Zainab, his wives, his children, and his brothers with him. Like the day of Mubahala, it was again a matter of clarifying the truth and promoting Islam in the real sense of the word. That shows the importance of promoting Islam. If someone comes across a ruthless sultan who mixes up halal with haram and breaks his promises to God, they deserve living with the sultan in the hereafter. That is to say, when someone sees such a person, they should clarify the truth throughout their words and actions, just as Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam did, and he paid the price for it. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam brought his dear ones and his wives and children to Karbala in order to clarify the truth.
Ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana latshan.
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
One can clearly notice in his lifestyle all the methods that could have been used by a descendant of the Holy Prophet to preserve the great legacy of Islam, which has been passed down by the Holy Prophet of Islam and his father, as well as their genuine followers. We can clearly see everything in the lifestyle of the Lord of the Martyrs, everything ranging from clarification to forewarning, to promotion of Islam, to provoking the conscience of prominent figures of his time during a sermon in Mina. All the things are tangible in the lifestyle of the Lord of the Martyrs, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Later on, he stood up against a great deviation and laid down his life. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam was aware of the consequences of his movement. He was an infallible imam. Infallible imams' extensive knowledge and insight are beyond our heads. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam revolted to set a role model and he refused to surrender. He asked people to help him, and when a group of people from Kufa expressed their willingness to accompany him on his path, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam accepted their offer and moved towards Kufa, and he did not give up in the middle of the way.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.